step reinforcement learning theorem prover. Yes, we can see your screen.
See, let me.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so hello everybody. I have to begin with an apology to all of you who have read the abstract of this talk. I'm going to talk about something very different. So let me begin with a quote, a very long old quote. It says, automated theorem proving is not the beautiful process we know as mathematics. This is cover your eyes with blinders and hunt through a cornfield for a diamond-shaped grain of corn. I think many of you have encountered this criticism of automated theorem proving. Nevertheless, currently all the reasonable theorem provers are heavily based on search. The best ones are all doing very, very refined search, and there has been a huge advancement in these systems, better architectures, faster hardware, software, and a lot of human heuristics and learned heuristics added to them. But I want to argue that all these systems, as long as they are heavily based on search, are bound to hit a depth limit. And most probably, the problems that people really care about are going to be beyond that limit. And so we started thinking about ways to reduce dependence on search. I don't think anybody really believes that getting rid of search in automated theorem proving is possible. But I think it's definitely worth putting more emphasis on solutions that are less search dependent. Of course, this is an old problem. People have been thinking about it for many decades. Currently, my impression is that the most popular approaches these days are based on making larger steps in the search space, using tactics, lemmas, all sorts of complex actions, which allow us to not have to make tiny steps in the space. There are approaches about hierarchical reasoning. We start from a high-level proof, and on that high level, the search space is not that large, and then we gradually refine it, cool it down to the calculus level. I feel that this direction went out of fashion these days. I'm actually not sure why. And then a third approach, which has been present from the very early days of ATP, is proving by analogy. That is to grasp some proof idea from one problem and then just carry it over to another problem. This again, I feel that it went out of fashion. And in this talk, I would like to focus on proving by analogy, and then argue that it may be a useful direction. So the main reason why proving by analogy is hard, and I think this is the reason why it's not really present in strong ATPs, is that it's very, very dependent on proper representation. People have tried to look at problems with essentially the same proof idea, and they found it too hard to map the problems or even the proofs to each other. And but that was before the time of machine learning. So I would just cautiously say that maybe it's time to revisit this approach with machine learning models that are just getting better and better at embedding mathematical expressions. What's the benefit of proving by analogy? It's mostly that it's less sensitive to proof length. If we grasp an idea from a simple problem, then using it in a harder setting, which requires basically just longer application of the same idea, might not be that big a big problem. Okay, so at this point, I'll try to define analogy. I don't know how to define it, but I'll just give it a first try, a very simple try. Basically, what I mean by analogy is to train a system on some problems, maybe a lot, maybe a few, maybe just one, and then see what the system can do without search, just one shot. So we were interested in understanding how different machine learning approaches that are present these days support this kind of reasoning by analogy or this kind of one-shot theorem proving. And here I would like to compare two systems, both guiding a first order theorem prover, the same link-up connection tableau calculus, and both are using reinforcement learning, but still in a quite different setting. The first one is PLCOP, which I briefly talked about on Monday. It's using Monte Carlo tree search. Here you have the tree search, which is aided with two models, a value model and a policy model. And then occasionally, periodically, we extract training data from the trees that we're building. We use the model to fit. We use the training data to fit our models and then start building the trees again. So that's the basic idea. The other system, called FLOP, is using policy gradient learning, in particular proximal policy optimization, but that's not going to be important. Here we have a reinforcement learning agent, which interacts with an environment, which is a theorem proving environment, and the agent generates rollouts. Basically, it walks through proof attempts and then continuously adjusts its models based on the rewards it observes. Okay, and I would like to compare these two systems on four data sets. The first two data sets are coming from the TPTP library, from the logical calculi domain. In this domain, problems typically look like this. You take a simple calculus and then prove that a certain axiomatization is at least as strong as any other axiomatization, or that one axiom can be removed in this calculus, things like these. The nice thing about these problems is that they have been around for a long time, and people have been looking at them, and a lot of ATP effort went into solving these problems. We actually have extended these problems. We took eProver and ran the eProver on this problem sets for a long time. And from the successful proof attempts, we extracted the lemmas generated by eProver, or the lemmas that didn't use the target theorem to be proved, just the axioms. So these lemmas do give us a rather smooth path towards the theorems. So there is a lot of room for machine learning. On the other hand, it's not so one lemma builds on another, but it's not that knowing how to prove one lemma is going to be enough for proving another lemma. You do have to do some search, nevertheless. And the other two problem sets are very simple problem sets built on Robinson arithmetic. Here in the first problem set, stage one, we have equations with just one operator, things like 5 times 5 equals 25, or 2 plus 2 equals 4. And in stage two, things get just a little more complicated. On the left side of the equation, we get VLL, a random expression with multiple operators, but still just addition and multiplication. So the first two data sets require more search. The second two data sets have a very strong structure, so one might see that it's not a, it can be very hard to find an algorithm to solve these problems. On the other hand, proofs can get very long, so especially in stage two we can get problems with over 10,000 or 20,000 steps. But of course, we have shorter ones. So we trained the two provers on these four problem sets, and we evaluated them in two ways. First, we used Monte Carlo tree search for evaluation. Basically, both of the systems end up providing a trained policy and the value, so we can use that directly. And then we see that PLCOP, the system which was trained using MCTS, is consistently better. It's much better on the LCL dataset, on the dataset which requires a lot more search. The difference is smaller for the Robinson arithmetic data sets, but there is still a significant difference. However, in the second setup, we are going to do one-shot evaluation. We just take the action which is deemed best by the policy. And then one thing we see is that PLCOP basically collapses on the LCL datasets. It proves very little when it's deprived of its search mechanism. FLOP here is largely unaffected, which means it's not really making good use of the extra search that it's provided here. for Robinson arithmetic, it's a different pattern. Actually, both systems benefit from eager evaluation. This is because the Monte Carlo tree search imposes a certain depth limit for them, and they can get farther without that. Here in this setup, flop basically gets perfect result, definitely on stage one. And in stage two, the reason why there is a 20% missing here is that it's timeouted. It didn't make a mistake, but it timeouted on these is problems with over 10,000 steps. It is actually the feature extraction which took too long. So we try to understand these different patterns between the provers. So why is it that PLCOP is much better coupled with MCTS, and FLOP is better coupled with one-shot evaluation? And so the two systems use almost the same calculus. They use almost the same features. We actually did try with the very same calculus and very same features, and it's roughly the same. I mean, the results are roughly the same. They use different models. PLCOP is using XGBoost, and FLOP is using neural networks. But it turns out that this is not what makes the difference. We checked briefly, and the patterns don't change if we change the model. And the difference is that they just have different learning objectives, and they were asked to do different things. Let's look at PLCOP, which is trained in the MCTS setting. On a high level, PLCOP takes a search algorithm and it learns to make it better. The search algorithm itself is external to the optimization procedure. We collect large batches of training data from the search algorithm and then do a training on that. And eventually the model is learned to search. It's not learned to prove. For example, we are training it to include exploration, which is a very useful thing when you do search, but it can be very dangerous when you want to recover a proof, which is very long. Our experience is that many, if not most, of the machine learning projects which guide ATPs are similar in spirit. They take a search algorithm and learn to make it better, learn to smart search heuristics. Then on the other hand, FLOP, what we train is more directly related to reconstructing the proof. So we explicitly reinforce good rollouts generated by the current policy. We don't have any proxy measures of quality. And also, the training setup is much less dependent on the underlying model of the world. We just make a local decision on the current observation. We don't care during training about what kind of proof attempts we've had before. Here in FLOP, learning is continuous. We after each rollout, we make tiny adjustments to the policy. And I would say that most of the above is true to a much larger family of reinforcement learning algorithm. Most temporal difference algorithms are like that, and they seem to be just better at directly learning how a proof goes. So based on the experiments we've run, our proposal, it's still not very deep. We want to suggest that if we think of machine learning as, if we take a search procedure and use machine learning to make it better, then we'll end up having a very good search mechanism. We'll do search better. But if we take a method which has search as an internal part, part of the optimization procedure, then we'll end up having a system which is better for this analogical reasoning. I'm going to summarize here. I very strongly believe that search-based theorem proving is hitting a barrier, and we should pay more attention to that. I suggest that reasoning by analogy might be a good solution for many of the problems search-based theorem proving has, and especially now that machine learning is coupled with theorem proving, it is more reasonable than it was in the 80s and 90s when people gave up hope in this direction. And I also suggest that temporal difference-based reinforcement learning methods are going to be better in this analogy problem. But of course, eventually, we will also have to figure out how to combine search and analogy. I don't think a strong system is going to be possible without one or the other. And this is it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So questions. I will start with, I am happy with the way you phrased it, that somehow there's the difference in the objective, but I would not completely agree with the objective that you mentioned. So if you think about the Monte Carlo tree search, then this is guided by both a policy and a value function. Mm-hmm. And the policy is indeed trying to learn the best way to search for the proof. But the way I have seen value being taught would be that value is given positives for the places where there is a proof, and it's given negatives for the areas in the tree where there's no proof. Therefore, I think value is actually having as the objective the same thing as what you do in FLOP. Would you comment on this?
Yes. Thank you very much. Very good point. And I'm smiling because 10 minutes before the talk, I had this very same thought, and I put on my list to check what happens if we don't rely on the policy for either evaluation, but on the value. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions? Nicolas,
if you see you. Yeah. So what do you mean by not doing search. So I have the impression that there's nothing else than search, right? So I mean, you can have some bigger steps and you can navigate the search, but it seems to me like saying that you're going away from search is just kind of red herring. Like, seems like you're doing qualitatively something different, but I mean, people also just do search, right? It's just that the search space is less defined. So, I mean, I have some strange ideas that are popping up in my head, and then I just go to the next idea, and you know, so it's still search. I mean, it's just, it yeah, seems well, to me that, like, search is just, it's a little bit misleading.
So I think I disagree with this. I did interview a bunch of mathematicians, and they all admit that they do some search, but it's a minor part of their proof effort. So they may do a little bit of local search. That's one thing they say. They may do these high level proof plans. And then maybe if the proof plan has details that needs to be worked out, they may do some search, but they certainly don't do extensive search. I don't want to say that search is something that it's possible to get rid of search, but I think the humans do much, much less search.
I mean, I think like when people tell you that they don't do search, it's just something in their head, right? So I mean, people don't really understand what they do, right? So people believe they have things like free will and whatnot, and intuition or whatnot, right? But I mean, your head is just constantly producing some ideas, right? So I mean, you don't consciously think you're doing some search, but the fact that somehow your head is constantly producing some ideas, I mean, what is it other than search, right? I mean, okay, maybe we're getting a bit more philosophical.
Probably a better distinction here might be like low-level search on the level of your first-order logic calculus, or higher-level search on the level of some proof plan.
Or we could do with Kahneman and say that maybe system one is doing the search without system two knowing about it, and system two of the mathematician is usually not doing search so often.
Yeah, well, so anything that the unconscious, what we do unconsciously, I can't really contradict. So you can be right. I do think that there is a lot of pattern matching in constructing proofs. It's sometimes you just look at the problem and you don't really search for it. You immediately know that this is going to be solved by a certain approach, an approach that you've seen in another proof, or you've explicitly learned that approach. And of course, there are cases when this isn't that easy.
Okay, I think we're now going to the philosophical thing about human mind. So let's keep this part of the discussion offline, and let's thank Scholt again.
Thank you.
Let's switch to Philip.
Philip will talk from here.
Okay, so I'll just you know how to play this thing. Yeah.
Sit here.
Okay.